if you put people in a room and you say, okay, get into groups based on your age, the people in the groups might have nothing in common. Whereas if you pull them out and, like you just said, you say, who's a fan of Metallica? You might have someone who's 18 and someone who's 55, and they both like that band, but they actually have more in common than the people potentially in their group based on age. So I think it is looking at what are you looking for from the brand and also your values and your interests.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. Now, if you're a regular listener, you'll know that me and the team get a lot of joy out of it when you guys shout about us on social media or get in touch to tell us what you thought of the show. So we like to repay them by giving a bit of a shout out. And I've got a bit of a backlog at the moment, so we're doing two today. Yes, two shout outs. First off, big hello to Ellie Rivers, who I met at the recent Pulse Summit in London, who is also hanging out with the lovely Hannah Spicer, who's been on a few of our Keep Optimizing episodes. So hello, Ellie. Thanks for coming and saying hello. Great to have you listening to the show. And also to Joseph McQuaid, who sent me a LinkedIn DM to say thank you for creating the podcast, because he's been listening for 2 years and he really enjoys listening. So I think most of the rest of the DM I should keep quiet. But Joseph, really appreciated your message and really appreciate you listening to the show as well. So for Joseph, Ellie, and all our other listeners, what have we got coming up for you in this episode? Well, we are talking to a brand, or the head of e-commerce for a brand who have to drive profit in every order. So from the first order onwards, they still care about loyalty, but they've also got to get those first orders really flying in at the best possible margin protection level they can. And core to that is how they create their marketing so it really resonates with their customers, which means really getting to grips with your customer personas. So our guest is a bit of a customer persona expert, and she's going to be taking us through her process to define and use those customer personas within the business. She's also sharing lots of very clever marketing tips as we go along as well. But the real core of this one is customer personas. So if they've got you confused, floundering, not showing what to do, knowing you need to do them, then this is very much the episode for you. And make sure you listen to the end, because you do not want to miss our guest's top tips. And now to introduce our special guest. Frederica Watson is the head of e-commerce at UK beauty brand Nip & Fab. Founded over 10 years ago, they sell via their Shopify store and wholesale, and the D2C e-commerce site has a seven-figure turnover. Hello, Frederica.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Very cool to have you on the show. How did you end up in the wonderful world of e-commerce?
I always like to say that I fell into e-commerce because I didn't study marketing. Like a lot of people, I think, in the industry, it's something that not necessarily you did at university. So I studied law and linguistics, but I had a passion for fashion and beauty. And so I ended up interning for a company, and they didn't have anyone doing their website, their digital marketing. So as these things go, you sort of take on that role, and that's how it all happened. So happenstance, but a fantastic opportunity arose and I took it. So
it is one of those weird things. Back in the day, it was like, oh, e-commerce, let's give it to the intern.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Can you imagine that now?
so mad, but made total sense. That's a bit complicated. New young people understand these things.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did get called the going IT for a while, and I thought, well, not really, but okay.
I think half my relatives still think I work in IT. Because that's just how it's been explained. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, before we go down that little rabbit hole, you're now working at the very cool brand Nip & Fab. Tell us a bit more about it, because I just said UK beauty brand, which really barely explains it at all. So tell us a bit more about Nip & Fab and the products, please.
So The Rodial Group owns two brands, Rodial and Lip and Fab. Rodial is a sort of more luxury skincare and makeup brand founded by Maria Hassie Stefanis, who's still our founder, still in the business today. And she wanted to bring a brand that was more affordable, bringing still those kind of top quality ingredients, but to the high street. And actually at the time, you know, over 10 years ago, there weren't as many brands offering those sort of, you know, glycolic acid, salicylic acid, those sort of key ingredients, but on the high street that you can buy self-select in Boots, Superdrug. So she really was one of the first. There are so many brands now, it's just a completely different landscape. But the brand really is focused on bringing those key ingredients to the consumer in an easy way, easy to understand. You say, actually, I need to brighten my skin. I'm going to go for vitamin C. You know, I might need to exfoliate. I'll go for glycolic acid. So it really gives you different ranges for your different concerns. We always say we're a concern-based brand rather than just, oh, I'm going to apply a cream and it might make my skin feel nice. It's more about, okay, well, actually, I have breakouts or I have fine lines or there's something you want to address, you come to Nip and Fab for it. And we have really a massive customer base all the way from our teen skin line and that actually parents buy really for their teenagers all the way up to, you know, women in their 60s and 70s who are, you know, battling other type of skin concerns. So it's sort of a blessing and a curse, which we can talk about, I'm sure, from in terms of marketing, not having that kind of one core demographic, but also, you know, you can sell to everyone. So, you know, you can have it in the bathroom and everyone in the family can use the product. So I think that's also really interesting as a proposition.
Very cool. And you're based in the UK. Are you selling globally or just in the UK?
Yes, absolutely. So the website sells globally. The UK is definitely still our biggest market, but we're expanding into Europe with launches in store in the Netherlands and Belgium. So now that's obviously become more of a priority online as well. And then the US as well makes up, you know, a small piece of the pie.
Got you. And what does the team look like? I guess you've got the e-commerce team and you've got the different brand teams. Is it completely split, the wholesale and the e-commerce, or are you all together?
We work closely, which I think really helps. I have a really good relationship with the sales team. I think sometimes what you can find in businesses, and I know that I've experienced it before, is that actually people sit really separately and it's almost a, you know, you're not almost competing for the sales, which is silly because we're all one business. We want to win as a company. So I think, you know, if someone buys in Boots, happy days, you know, of course, we'd love them to buy online as well. But, you know, a customer journey is not linear. Someone might buy with us online one day and then, you know, a month later, they might see the product and buy it in Boots or wherever they are. So I think you have to think about it definitely as working together closely. So we do have people on the wholesale side. And then my team is digital marketing, CRM and loyalty and trading. So everything really from, you know, the way you discover the brand all the way to how we retain you, we, you know, you become a loyal customer. That's kind of how I like to think about it. It's like first click all the way through to, you know, that loyalty. And then there's also social media and PR as well, who again, we work very closely with. You know, as a brand, it is really that sort of, we're all in there getting stuck in and getting it done, which is my favorite environment personally. I love that scale up kind of everyone's in it together and sort of every day sitting around the same desk.
I remember a very long time ago, we had someone from the Tesco e-commerce team on the podcast and e-commerce and marketing were in different buildings.
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine, honestly.
It's befuddling, isn't it? How do you actually work together when you're literally, you have to go out in the rain to meet up with
it
anyway?
It blows my mind because, you know, you might have, for example, you know, you might spend all that time crafting a great ad on social media and you send it to a landing page, which is not optimized, you know, et cetera, has a really bad load time. And then where does the blame sit? So I think it's just better if you all work together and understand exactly what each team is doing. Luckily for me, it's all one team. So, you know, for us, it's the same.
And do you do everything within the team or have you got, you know, using key agencies or key freelancers and things for different things?
Yeah, we have agencies we work with. I think it's a really interesting conversation, sort of in-house versus agency. For me, agencies, they are keeping up to date all the time. They work with loads of different clients. So they're sort of learning every day. And that's what I like about agencies, because you're kind of getting all that knowledge from what they're doing with their other clients. Sometimes clients who are spending a lot more money as well. So it's great if you're a smaller brand. So you get that benefit. So yeah, we have agencies for all our paid media and also creative production is one that we've started recently as well, which I think is, you know, becoming more and more important. And then obviously for things like affiliates and PR, we get some help there as well.
Excellent. Love your philosophy there as well. Now, one of the things which really fascinated me about your pitch to come on the show was that as a business at Nip and Fab, you have to make the first order profitable. And we're hearing so much talk about retention and, you know, the first order becomes loss-making and you make the money further down the line, especially in sectors like beauty where subscription is talked about a lot. So I thought it'd be really fascinating to dive into what it takes to actually make the first order profitable. Is it just a case of changing your ROAS targets, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, we can start with that. Yeah, definitely. but yeah, I think people talk a lot about retention, like you said, but retention for me starts with acquisition. So you have to be acquiring the right kind of customer. Not everybody is going to want to subscribe at the end of the day, and not every brand is made for that. You know, you might be going after a customer in their 20s who is going to want to buy a different beauty product every month just because that's what they want to do. They don't necessarily want the same thing over and over again, which is why actually thinking about who you're going after as a customer and who you're looking to acquire will help you later down the line. Is this a customer that is more likely to repeat again? They have a higher propensity to repeat. And that's why for me, it all started really with understanding when I started working for the brand, actually, who is the customer that we want to go after? Forget who we have now. You know, we can definitely look at our current customer base, but also who are we sort of hoping to acquire that we think will be a loyal customer and will be with us for the long term. So not only then do you have that first order profitability, which we are so lucky that we do have, which is incredible, but also, you know, then you start thinking, actually, if I know that these people are going to be coming back after 3-6 months, then I can sort of extend that payback period. So I think it's really looking at doing that persona work to begin with and workshopping that with teams, which I can go into in more detail if you like.
Very much like. But you mentioned when you were first explaining the brand about how you have these different customer groups. So I guess it's not that surprising to me that you are good at personas, because you were knowing, it felt like you knew exactly who your customers were. So how did you start the persona piece? Because actually, even before we go there, what for you is a persona? Because, you know, I find some brands are like, well, I need to be able to identify them on my database. And unless I can identify them, I don't care. And others are like, well, they use Spotify to listen to, and Chloe can't think of any bands at all. All she's got in her head is Ted Baker, which I know isn't a band. It's a fashion brand. But anyway, you know, it's like they listen to this and their favorite TV show is Handmaid's Tale and all the rest of it. What for you does a successful persona look like?
I'm more inclined to think about it, like you just said, with interests and things that someone, the values that they hold, because I think the whole, oh, it's a woman between 35 and 55 just doesn't really work in general and never has. I remember seeing someone speak years ago and they were talking about kind of community and personas. And they said, if you put people in a room and you say, okay, get into groups based on your age, the people in the groups might have nothing in common. Just because I'm 25 and someone else is 25, I wish I was 25, I'm not 25, don't know why I said that. If you're the same age, maybe you think, okay, we're the same age, but we don't have a lot in common. Whereas if you pull them out and, like you just said, you say, who's a fan of Metallica? You might have someone who's 18 and someone who's 55, and they both like that band, but they actually have more in common than the people potentially in their group based on age. So I think it is looking at interests, values, how you feel about the industry, what you're looking to get from your products. For example, for us, it might mean actually someone who is 65 going through the menopause might have breakouts, the same as someone who's 25 and having breakouts. So they're both looking for that specific product. I'm looking for something for oily skin, for spots. So it, not necessarily is it to do with just your age, but it's to do with what are you looking for from the brand and also your values and your interests. So I'm much more inclined to look at it that way. Obviously, yes, getting as deep as TV shows, you can take it that far if you like. It's tricky.
But it's more the working out what the key factors with the customer's relationship with your brand are and then segmenting by those. Would that be a fair way to sum it up?
Absolutely. I mean, we found that we had some customers, for example, who, you know, they may have been on a different stage of their skincare journey. Someone's never used skincare before. Someone's a pro. They've been going to clinics. But actually, they all feel that they're let down by the industry because they're not seeing women their age represented. They feel like they don't really align with that kind of glamorous, very like celebrity driven brands. So they have that in common, even though really you could look at them and say, you're a completely different customer because you might have been a different stage of your journey in terms of skincare, but actually what you feel about the industry and what really is going to pull you in emotionally is the same.
Got you. And so how do you start trying to define that? Because it occurs to me you could get the team round a table and discuss it. You could get some customers round a table and discuss it. You could run surveys. You could look through your analytics. Where's your starting point for this?
The starting point is definitely getting the right people in the room. So I think oftentimes we can sit there as marketers and say, okay, well, we'll just get the marketing team in the room. But actually, where's customer service? Because they're speaking to the customers every single day. The amount of times I've seen these things run and they're not even present is crazy. And you might also want to get people who are in who potentially, if you've got stores or if you're, you know, you might have counters, get those people in the conversation as well. Again, they're speaking to customers every day. And then, you know, start thinking about actually, what do we know about our current customer? And that's the first question to ask. Like you said, you then can do surveys, but for me, the most important thing is actually to talk to them yourself. So we've done a lot of sort of 20-minute calls with customers. You have to incentivize people for these things, of course, but you know, £100 Amazon voucher, people will be willing to give you their life story. So I think it's not actually too expensive to have those conversations. So really kind of sitting down with customers, getting that, and then bringing that to the table. So everybody sort of brings something with them. This is what I've learned. And actually that's when we started to see the similarities. Oh, we've got people saying this when they're emailing in. We had someone say that in the survey or potentially on a call. So I think it's about getting the information and bringing it to the table with the right people in the room. I think that's a good starting point. And then you can kind of start going through sharing the information and seeing where those similarities, where's the crossover? Because that's where the magic is really for then acquiring new customers.
I love that idea of everyone kind of, the different departments do their own research in their own way, as it were, and then bring it together to look for the overlaps. Because so often what you're trying to get out of the customer is actually quite hard to get out of the customer. You know, and what do you like about our product? It smells nice. Not that useful at all in this scenario. Why do you buy this product? Because I've got spots. More useful, but not hugely useful. So if you're getting, you know, those different approach, like the customer services approach versus the marketing approach versus the phone call approach versus the survey approach, it gives you different angles that then start to kind of peel back the layers to get you to the data you really want to understand with the motivations, the values, those kind of things. How long does this process take?
If you want to set up the interviews, yes, it takes longer because you've got to look at, get into your customer database, understand the type of customers you want to reach out to. Maybe you're looking at people you want to find as really loyal people. That's fine. You can have a look at the database and set up those interviews. So, you know, give yourself a month, 6 weeks, and then come together and you can put everything there. I mean, even things like getting ChatGPT to look at all your reviews and just go through everything and pick out those key trends. What are people saying that they love about the product? What are people saying potentially they don't like about the product? One of my key things is going to competitor websites. So for example, you might, if it's for beauty, you might go to boots.com and have a look at the negative things people are saying about your competitors. So what do they not like about those products? Because you might start to understand more about that consumer as well. So yeah, even that from a perspective of just, that's a quick one that you could just do in a day easily. But if you want to do the whole piece, then yes, absolutely, it's going to take some time to bring all that together. But it's worth it in the end, because having those video recorded interviews as well that everybody can watch back, that's more of a conversation. People are more willing to give you information. Like you said, a survey answer, you don't get a lot, you know? When you're actually conversing with the person and you understand their desires, their wants, potentially how they're frustrated by other brands or other, you know, parts of the industry, that is just gold to me, really.
So we're talking a process that takes weeks rather than months and months. How do you know when you're done? You know, because it could be a kind of an endless trying to find the perfect one before you start actually doing anything with it. So at what point do you know it's time to actually start working on delivering for these personas?
I think you could go on, like you said, you could keep going. And I think if you want to get more information and then keep iterating on it, it could be a process that just continuously is happening at any given time because customers change. You might want to look at customers who buy different ranges. They might be very different. But for me, once you've got an understanding of a few core things that bring these people together, for example, one of the things, like I said, was the frustration with the sort of not being represented in the industry and not kind of fitting to that mold and saying, you know, sometimes you get really good lines from customers. So one lady said to us, it's no bells and whistles. And I thought, okay, that's a tagline. We stop everything. We can go and make that ad right now. So I think once you have a few of those core things, start testing. There's no reason to wait. Then, like I said, you can continue doing the process. But I think once you have some ideas, start putting them out anyway. You know, it might be, might start with some sort of static ads that are quite easy and cheap to produce. See if these things are resonating with people. If you get good performance on no bells and whistles skincare, then let's move on and make that into a video concept. It doesn't have to be, oh, let's go and spend loads of money straight away. Let's test those concepts and validate those things first. But you'll get those one-liners and that kind of brings it all together. I think that's when I'm like, oh, I'm keen to just go and get it done now and test it.
I love the way you explain that, because I think sometimes in a marketing department, we can be like, the goal is to create the personas. And we forget that the goal is actually to create some marketing that resonates with target customers and existing customers. So
yeah,
so it makes total sense that the point at which you stop is when you've got a great idea for a campaign. Let's put it out there and see what happens. You were suggesting there that this is a process that continues forever. So is this something which you have like a schedule of coming back to? You know, do you revisit this once a year? Do you not have a schedule, but you kind of sniff out that something might be happening, or is it continuously there's conversations with customers proactively going on to amend this?
We always have the conversations going in the sense of to things like survey. For example, I think something that people don't do enough of is having a survey on your confirmation page. Just ask people a couple of questions. They'll be willing to answer a few questions, and everybody sees that confirmation page. So it's the perfect place to ask a few questions, not just where did you hear from us, which is like the number one, but have a few, you know, that you can kind of cycle through. That maybe ask people, a great one is, why? What made you almost not purchase with us today? Is there anything that made you almost not buy? Because it's kind of figuring out like, what can we change and what can we iterate on? So I think in terms of surveys, you can continuously do them. Obviously, if you want to do the kind of customer interviews, you could do it once or a couple of times a year, depending. And maybe you have, you know, a new product launch coming up and you say, well, actually, we want to get more information because this product would be specifically tailored to that kind of audience. So maybe a younger audience, we need to do more interviews with this type of segment of consumer. So I think you can do it based on your marketing calendar and what you have coming up. But ideally, you have information coming in at all times just from those sort of customer surveys and feedback. And we meet with the customer service team every week anyway. So if there's anything that's coming up consistently, we'll know about it. If someone's, oh, actually, people are saying that they don't like this, or, you know, it might be that we'll sort of address it at the time. You need to have those regular conversations because sometimes they just sit there and nobody actually knows about it from a marketing perspective.
Yeah, so it's kind of, I get you've kind of like, we've done the project, we've got the ideas, and then you've set up almost a load of tripwires for yourself that if something comes up in one of the conversations with customer service or with the regular reviews of those ongoing surveys, that will flag that we need to do something else. Or I guess the marketing performance drops off as well would flag it.
And it doesn't need to be negative. It could be positive. If people keep saying, oh, you know what I love about your vitamin C is the fact that it's not sticky. So I'm not finding that it's tacky under makeup, for example. If people keep saying that, I want to know about it because that's a great thing to use in our marketing, especially if you notice that other brands, the reviews are saying, oh, it's sticky. Perfect. We can start saying lightweight, non-sticky formula. They're just these little nuggets of one-liners. I think sometimes people just pull the negatives. So they want to know from customer service, oh, what's going wrong this week? What are people saying they don't like? What can we change? But actually, what are the positives? Because that's what's going to be able to acquire new customers. You're going to use that information to then acquire, you know, new customers in the future.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So, Frederica, are you ready for the top tips?
Yep.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
So I would recommend How to Build a Story Brand by Donald Miller. You might have had guests mention it before. I love it because it really teaches you how to position the brands. I think a lot of people want to position their brand as the hero of the story. We're amazing. We do all these things. Great. But it shows you that the customer really is the hero of the story. and the brand is the guide. So you're there to help the customer. You're kind of selling them on what they will become with your product, not your product. So I think it's a really interesting one. It's a quick read. Anyone can read it really easily over a weekend. So it's a really good one that will just get you thinking about storytelling and brand building and just how to kind of highlight the customer, make sure that they feel like they're the sort of number one, not just your brand being amazing.
Yeah, such a subtle shift, but such an important shift. The traffic top tip, which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
This is a tough one because I think people, there's a lot of talk about all these channels these days. But I think for me, a lot of people talk about TikTok, but I don't think a lot of people are talking about TikTok affiliate. So if you, for example, decide you want to be on TikTok Shop, which a lot of brands are now hopping on, there are affiliates out there who are not big creators. We're not talking about influencers who might charge you, you know, £10,000 for a post. These are people who are just working on commission. It's like affiliates back in the day, which I love to see because if you're a small brand, again, you're trying to be profitable on every order, just giving someone, you can afford to give someone 25% because what are you paying to acquire them on Meta? I think in our heads, we're thinking, oh, I'm giving away 25%, but how much are you giving to Facebook? Because I'm betting it's more, you know? So actually using those kind of smaller affiliates and giving a decent commission level that will incentivize people to talk about your product, you know, anyone can go viral on TikTok. You don't have to have, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers. So just sending product to people and getting out there, if you can do it, if your cost of goods is low enough that you can send product out, you might just hit gold with someone getting millions of views.
It is mad how few people are talking about TikTok affiliates because yeah. It is just, I mean, it's a no-brainer to test it at the very least. When I heard, I was like, what, they've built the affiliate program into the marketplace.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And they've built the creator bit in. Oh, yeah, just brilliant. Mm. So thank you for flagging that one for everybody. The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
I think I couldn't live without Motion Analytics. So if you want to really dig into your creative and performance in terms of paid media, you just plug Facebook in and you can really see the creative there and you've got loads of different metrics. And the good thing about it is it's quite hard sometimes to talk to designers and creatives about the actual metrics. Here you can see the creative. Underneath it will tell you, you know, the customer acquisition cost, the ROAS, also things like hook rate, thumb stop rate, the more of those creative based metrics. And it just helps creative teams to say, oh, okay, that was really good because the first 3 seconds really grabbed people. Let's try and iterate on that. We'll change the rest of it because maybe it's not holding people further in the creative, but the hook was great. So how can we change that? And you can kind of share sort of screenshots and you can link people to different, so you can sort of share it with different teams. It's fantastic. If you really want to look at creative analysis and take it seriously, it's so much easier than trying to go into the ads platform, especially for people who aren't using, you know, Facebook Ads Manager every day.
Got you. And it's called Motion Analytics.
Motion. Yes.
I shall have to go and look at that one. Not come across that one before, but it sounds brilliant. The carbon top tip. What's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I think it can be as simple as thinking about the size of packaging. So a lot of times I do a lot of online shopping, unsurprisingly. It's all research, competitor research. That's what I tell myself. And sometimes they come in big boxes and it's one product. And I'm thinking, well, that was just a waste. You can get really good sort of sustainable envelopes, padded envelopes now that can go through someone's letterbox, easier for them as well, because they might not be in. You know, we sell some small products. It might be a small bottle. It might be, you know, sheet masks. Think about how you can actually reduce the size of the packaging and then look at a sustainable way to do that, because it doesn't necessarily need to be the same size box for every order. I understand, obviously, you have to order more packaging, but actually it's going to save you money in the long term and it's going to be better for the planet. So.
It is crazy how much potential financial and waste saving can be in just streamlining your packaging activity. Yeah, there's always more weight, money, air, and materials to be taken out of packaging. Almost.
Absolutely, yeah.
Frederica, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social?
Yeah, so we're Niff and Fab on everything. So you can find us on Instagram, TikTok, and www.niffandfab.com. So go and have a look at the skincare and let me know how it goes.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And Frederica, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You've clearly got customer personas nailed, and so few have. So very, very kind of you to share your insights into creating them and working with them. So thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
What great advice there from Frederica. If you have been struggling with your creative, which I know a lot of you are at the moment, or if you've got stuck with the boss asking you for personas and you don't know what to do, there is your roadmap to success. Love that breakdown. So get everyone involved so you're getting all those different angles on the customer. Pull it all together. Remember what the goal of doing this is. It's to make your marketing better. It's about the marketing messages. So you've got to hunt those down. And when you've got some of those, go and test them and see if it works and iterate and optimize based on those. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those top tips and links to what we mentioned by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can use our direct episode short links. That's ecmp.info/the episode number. Drop that in the URL bar to go straight to the correct page on the website. And when you get to the website, don't forget to add yourself to our email list so we can send you lots of other cool things to help you improve your business. If you liked this episode, then I reckon you would get a lot out of episode 510 with Lauren Duncan from Philip Kingsley. They're another beauty brand, and Lauren and I are chatting about how she's been through a more than a year-long process to optimize and reduce the number of promotions and discounts they are giving to the customer. So if you're looking at improving those margins, that's definitely an episode for you. And you can get all our beauty related episodes at ecmp.info/beauty. Thank you so much for checking in to this episode of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week to inspire and help e-commerce business owners and marketers like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week, and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.